Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. In late April, San Antonio schools saw student attendance drop when word came out that there was a threat of violence at one local school district. The threats were called non-credible, but parents were still in fear and kept their children at home in droves. Then days later, a student showed up at Madison High School with handguns and an assault rifle stashed in a restroom. The school was locked down, and according to reports, students hid in restrooms, in the storerooms, and classrooms for an hour, fearing the worst. Fortunately, we did not have an active shooter, but what about the next time? We are talking about the recent school security issues here in San Antonio. What did we learn? What are the processes in place? What can we do better next time? Is the media being responsible? Are parents overreacting? Are schools looking for the warning signs? Is the SAPD giving us information that we need? Maybe they're giving us too much information. Is every threat being taken seriously? And is that a good thing? We invite you to join the conversation. Call us at 210-614-8980. You can also email your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. We had planned on having San Antonio Police Chief William McManus joining us, but at the last minute he had to cancel. However, if he does have an opportunity to call in, we would love to hear from him or someone from SAPD to explain the processes and what we're doing to keep our children safe. And that number is 210-614-8980. We do have with us on the phone, we have the superintendent of Northside ISD, Brian Wood, and NEISD Executive Director of Communications, Aubrey Chancellor. Welcome to The Source, both of y'all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Superintendent Wood, after all this stuff happened in April, do you feel like we've learned something? Are we able to prevent this?
Oh, I don't know that you're able to prevent someone sending an anonymous email thread. That would be significantly challenging. I think if we learn something, it appears to me to be that in the case of this particular individual who sent this threat, that it wasn't credible, and perhaps we needed to be more clear with folks early in that process that it really wasn't a credible threat.
One of the fallouts of this was the lack of the drop off in attendance, and then we heard how that's going to impact the state dollars that we get for schools. Is there a way that we can go back to the TEA and explain this was the circumstances and that any schools won't be penalized for this circumstance?
There is a provision in statute that allows a school district to file a waiver request with the Texas Education Agency, and I'll take that opportunity to say I think that the monetary impact, while it is important, and if we weren't to be granted a waiver, would be a significant issue for all of the districts in the county. I think that may have been blown out of proportion a little bit. I fully anticipate that these waivers will be granted, and I think the bigger impact really is about lost instructional time and about anxiety to families and people who work in schools.
Right, because we don't want superintendents such as yourself, others, having to make that tough call about losing hundreds of thousands of dollars due to the student drop-off attendance and having to judge whether or not a threat is credible based upon that. You've always want to put the student safety first.
Right, and that's one of the reasons the provision does exist in statute. And you know, none of us would be in a position of having to make a decision like that. We're going to always do what we think is in the best interest of student and staff safety. And so, again, I think the monetary impact may have been a little overblown in the coverage of this story.
Aubrey Chancellor, you're the Executive Director of Communications at NEISD. Walk us through how it works. When y'all find out about a threat, I mean, how often does a threat come to the school district?
I wouldn't definitely want to put, you know, a timeline on it. I would be speaking out of turn. You know, that would be a law enforcement question. But I can tell you that when it does come in, you know, every single threat is taken seriously, no matter what. But we do really have to listen to our experts out there and the San Antonio Police Department, our own school district police departments, our safety experts, our risk management departments, all of those people who are in place to assess whether the threat is credible, what precautions we put in place, and then, of course, our communication about it with parents.
So what does that mean, that every threat is taken seriously, and then you judge whether or not it is credible? I mean, it sounds like there are got to be some threats that are just ridiculous.
I'm sure there are, but again, you know, you can't turn your back on any threat. You know, that would be irresponsible. So regardless of what your gut instinct is when you first get it, every single one is going to be thoroughly investigated.
Yeah, I've got to keep in mind that there was that 17-year-old sophomore at Madison who showed up, Tarwater, and he had the guns. And that's, I mean, that is sobering. That is, we're no longer just talking about pranks.
Absolutely. You know, I think that was shocking for everyone involved, on the school side, on the parent side, everyone. It was certainly eye-opening. It came at, you know, it's never a great time. It would never be a good time. It would never be anything we would want. But then it comes on the heels of that generic, non-credible threat. And it really, you know, had a big impact on parents, schools, administrators, everyone's fear level. You know, and what you do have to remember, the one thing that I would say is, you know, he got those weapons from his home. He brought those from there. And so we really do need to focus on the fact that it's everyone working together, and it's parents and it's the school that need to work hand in hand to prevent things like this.
But the parents, they detected that the weapons were missing. They went to the school and they notified authorities that this was underway, and we were able to avoid a terrible situation. But still, there were students there that were traumatized by that event, even though it was contained. And so what happened after that to help these students?
We provide counseling for any student or staff member who needs it. Certainly, it's understandable that there were some kiddos who were traumatized, as you say, some parents and some staff members who just really needed to speak with somebody, and we provided that for them.
I understand from media reports that parents showed up at the school during the lockdown and were banging on the doors demanding that they get to retrieve their students. Police had to calm them down and tell them they could not enter at that point. Did that happen?
It did, yes. And, you know, most of us are parents. We understand that instinct to go and to want to see eyes on your child and get your child. But what we have to remember, as hard as it is we must allow police and emergency personnel to do their jobs. And we have to allow them to ensure the safety of the entire campus. And unneeded distractions like that really could compromise that.
Right. We have to have a contained location. We can't have helter-skelter. We do have to, I guess, up our communications with parents to let them know what the expectations are.
Absolutely. That day, for example, the principal and administration there at Madison High School communicated no less than 5 times with an automatic phone call to the parents. So they certainly were aware of the situation, and they were being kept updated.
Absolutely. But conversations like this certainly can help drive that message home.
Yes.
Okay, we're going to
continue
this conversation. We're talking about lessons learned from the threats that happened to the school districts here in San Antonio in late April, and also that one student who did show up with arms. What happened, and how do we move forward? What lessons can we, how do we learn from this? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about lessons learned from these school threats that happened in late April. One thing that we've discovered thus far by speaking with the superintendent of Northside ISD, Brian Woods, is that it's likely that the TEA will waive the loss of the attendance dollars that happened when so many people pulled their kids out of schools over those couple of days. So that is something that's a new development. Also, we're speaking with the NEISD Aubrey Chancellor, the Executive Director of Communications at that school district, about the process in determining what threats are serious. They're all serious, which are credible. How do you deal with that? How do you communicate to parents and make sure that we understand what's expected of them, we make things calm and work smoothly? Let's get some of our callers on the air. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Jamie has called in. Jamie, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. So I was just wondering, in light of the 65 school shootings that have taken place in the U.S. since Newtown, is there a larger conversation that should be taking place here about gun violence prevention in society? You know, should our mayor or our legislators have a greater role in this conversation? And what did our mayor or our legislators say to you about the threats that took place?
Okay, Jamie, appreciate your call. We've had that conversation. We'll continue to have that conversation about gun violence in America and the access to weapons that people have. And that is a big deal. We got to make sure that happens. But right now we're focusing on how our school districts can operate with the world as it exists right now. And so let me ask you that, Superintendent Brian Woods, did you have any communications with Mayor Castro or anyone else when they were concerned about what was happening?
No, I did not personally, no.
Okay, appreciate that. All right, let's get Eduardo on the line. Eduardo, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, hi, thank you. My question was, how do they determine if it's a credible or not credible threat?
Great question. Appreciate that. So, Brian Woods, how do you deal with that? How do you determine if something's credible or not?
Well, there are a lot of aspects of that, and some of that's determined by whether the threat's anonymous or can it be, you know, centralized to an individual, and obviously that goes a long way to determining credibility. But I think Audrey pointed out well that you know, we all have access to and employ expertise in threat assessment, and that's one of the things we count on law enforcement professionals to help us with, both internal resources and external resources like San Antonio Police.
So email, can't emails be traced? I mean, they've got to come from an account, right?
Well, you're not talking to an expert in that field, but I think that they can be traced, but I think they can also be, I don't know, masked, for lack of a better phrase.
And there are people in San Antonio who are who do this. They're serial threat makers, and I know that the police chief, McManus, who was supposed to join us today, but he couldn't at the last minute, had met with local news outfits talking about this, and that they're going to take a look at this individual and judge his threats on a different level than they would anyone else. So there are people out there who do make threats. And so how hard is it for you, Superintendent Woods, when you've got to run a school, you got to get kids in there, you got to maintain a sense of calm, and then you're getting these threats?
Yeah, it does make things very difficult. And, you know, we weigh the information that we give to our stakeholders and usually land on the side of giving more information than less. But that, as you well know, creates tremendous anxiety. And obviously in this case, it certainly did.
And what about the role of the media in this? Because I know that when these stories get play, then you get copycats out there.
Yeah, and we saw that happen. And, you know, I think the media does play a role. And I really think that, you know, leadership in media outlets need to ask themselves, you know, are we covering this story because it has real news value, or are we covering this story because it generates ad revenue? You know, I think that question really needs to be asked.
But it is difficult because you have to weigh. I can speak from being in the position as being the former news director here at Texas Public Radio, that you have to decide, okay, how much of a disruption is this threat already having? You know, if they're sending it out to parents already, and parents are calling us asking questions, then that becomes a story, and so we don't want to feed into this, but we want to cover it when it becomes news. And so Aubrey Chancellor, the executive director of communications at NEISD. When does a story like that become news and the media gets involved?
I understand where you're coming from, certainly, and I think if the parents already are aware and they're concerned, clearly I understand there's a place for that in the newscast. I think what we really need to focus on, though, as communicators, is getting both sides, making sure that the pertinent facts are at the top of the news story, perhaps maybe not at the bottom, you know, OPS, the San Antonio Police Department, said this wasn't credible. There's a service there that needs to be acted upon responsibly. And, you know, it is a fine line. It's definitely a fine line because the media has certainly a place and in helping many aspects of society. But in a case like this, I think it just needs to be, you know, really scrutinized, really careful reporting, really watching the words that are said and the tone in which it's said, because it can really do good for parents, or it can really instill fear in them more than what they're already feeling. So I think certainly some do it better than others.
And so now we have this era of social media where you could post something on Facebook or send a tweet. It was a text message. They got a lockdown at Madison from one student. They said it was a prank. So that's another avenue where you have to monitor, Aubrey.
Absolutely. And what we have learned through this process, just one of the many, is that we are going to, in any future lockdown situation, in an instance like what we experienced at Madison specifically, we're going to let all of the students who have cell phones text their parents, let them know that they're okay, let them know what's going on, and certainly continue their communication. We think that's better than the alternative, which is, you know, parents not knowing what's going on inside.
Parents, give us a call. Do you think that the local school districts are doing the right thing, or they're keeping your kids safe? Did you decide to pull your student, your son or daughter, out of school those days when we had those threats? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. So, Brian Woods over at NEISD, do students have to make that up? This counts as an absence? What happens now?
No, students won't necessarily make up the day. They'll make up what they missed as far as classwork is concerned, but not necessarily make up the day. It does count as an absence.
All right, and so moving forward, I mean, there are no medical metal detectors at any of your schools at Northside ISD, Superintendent Woods?
That's correct.
And do you think metal detectors have a place?
I think metal detectors are part of a really large conversation around security in any publicly open building. We have chosen not to go that direction in lieu of some other security measures and devices. But I don't want to say never. You know, at this point, we've decided not to do that. But I wouldn't say never.
And Aubrey Chancellor, you all have gone to transparent or net type backpacks over at Madison. Is that right?
That is right, and we're starting the conversation now of whether we'll be implementing that at all high schools starting in the fall.
So tell me about the advantage of that.
Well, the obvious advantage, maybe not so much with mesh, but what we're looking at, the possibility of going with clear backpacks, you know, it's a deterrent, if anything. You know that you can see inside of someone's backpack, and like the instance of the student who did, in fact, bring weapons inside of his backpack, he either might have thought twice about doing so, or certainly they would have been noticed.
All right, let's get Jay on the line. He's called in. Jay, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Welcome. I just wanted to make a quick comment saying that I understand a lot of parents were anxious on this particular event that happened in April that was publicized. I actually sent my daughter to school. It became almost like a vacation day, but I know that both at my daughter's elementary school as well as I know a lot of others, a lot of kids weren't there and parents were really anxious. But, I mean, it's unfortunate that had to go that way. I would like to believe that hopefully parents can be a little bit more logical about some of these things as well and heed the advice of both the districts and the law enforcement that when it's not credible, I mean, I think it was probably safer to go to school that day than any other day probably for that matter. And that's it. Thank you.
Okay, Jay, appreciate your phone call. Good ideas. Leo is called in. Leo, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Jay made a really good point about parents being logical. The comment that I would make would be towards the remark that was made about when does it become a news story and when does it not. I watch a lot of news, and what gets on my nerves the most, and I'm sure a lot of parents felt this way, is all these small bits that were coming out of pure speculation. get the story out, let them know that something's happening, you'll be updated, and then wait for the facts to come in. Because all media does, and I know it's there for with good intent, but it develops speculation in parents' mind, and it's what creates the mass paranoia. That's why you have parents banging on doors, which would have probably happened anyway, but this speculation that comes up because of all these unknowns that are still out there is what really creates mass panic.
All right, Leo, appreciate that. So let me ask you Brian Woods over at NISD, did you see that the media was speculating too much and making things seem more hyped up than it actually was?
Oh, I don't know. To be honest, I spent more time trying to manage the situation than I did worrying about the media coverage. So I don't know that I could say that's true in this particular instance. It may have been, and I'm just not aware of it.
All right. We appreciate talking about this. This is an important conversation that we got to have. We've got to remind ourselves that it's got to be taken seriously. But there are a lot of threats out there that are pranks, right? All right. Welcome to thanks for joining us. Aubrey Chancellor from NEISD, Director of Communications, and Brian Woods, Northside ISD. This is The Source on KSTX. Thanks for listening.